This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present Murder in Galway by Carlene O'Connor. Narrated by Heather O'Neill. Too close for comfort. Tara was grateful when Hound wandered over and got her mind off the past. He stood far enough away that she couldn't touch him, but close enough to know he wanted her attention. "Hey," she said. "Good morning." He whined, then turned and trotted around the side of the mill. A few seconds later, he poked his head out from the side of the building. Was he expecting her to follow? She approached him, hoping to sneak in a pet. Instead, she smelled paint. She soon saw why. Across the building in large, sloppy black letters was a painted message: "Go home, Yankee." She glanced at the Hound. He was sitting up, straight, tongue hanging out, happy to show her the writing on the wall. She was beginning to wonder if she should add him to the suspect list. Chapter 1. Emmett Walsh never thought he'd find himself in the middle of a fairy tale, but if Johnny Meehan didn't answer his door and produce Emmett's prized pig, he was going to huff and puff and most definitely blow something down. He prayed with each plodding step on the way to the stone cottage, fists clenched at his sides, that it wouldn't come to actual blows. He just wanted what belonged to him. He'd paid Irish Revivals a fortune to source this collector's item, and he refused to put up with any more of Johnny Meehan's shenanigans. If Meehan was trying to hold out for more money, he was going to regret it. The agreed-upon sum was quite a dear one. It was done and dusted, and Johnny Meehan was going to hand it over today. This rare gem, a cast-iron pig for the garden, was once owned by a Japanese princess. Imagine that now. Emmett smiled as the photograph from the catalogue rose before him like a mirage in the desert, making his trek slightly less intolerable. The mud was thick here, something between a bog and a bother. The earthy scent of the Galway Bay was strong, effortlessly carried by the breeze that also succeeded in blowing stray hairs of his white beard into his mouth as he trudged onward. This hadn't been the plan when he woke up this morning. Johnny should have met him at the door to the salvage mill. How had it come to this, being forced to invade a man's home? Johnny Meehan had left him no choice. He had Emmett's money, didn't he? Why was he torturing Emmett? He saw the pig in his mind's eye. It was photographed sitting in the garden next to that beautiful Asian princess. The cast-iron pig was about a foot high, sitting on its bottom, the mouth open in a laugh, the hands, would you call them hands, like, resting on its full belly, legs splayed out, mouth, snout, open in a laugh. The patina of green around the ears, gorgeous. And instead of hooves, this little piggy had tiny fingers and toes, eyes so open and real he could almost see the twinkle in them. And that was only from a photo. Emmett couldn't wait to feel the heft of the little piggy in his hands. Everything was made with plastic these days. Bollocks. Give him cast iron. Give him quality. Give him an item owned by royalty. He could not wait. Yet wait he had. He had waited and waited and waited. No more. The sun was coming up over Galway. There wasn't a moment to waste. He picked up his pace, sweat breaking out on his brow. He was already so in love. He would set the pig in front of his prize-winning rose bushes in the garden. It had taken Johnny Meehan an entire year to track the pig to a banker in Manchester, England, and another 6 months to convince him to sell. Emmett had paid dearly, both in desire and euro. Johnny Meehan was not going to get away with this. The miscreant was hiding from him. Meet me at the mill bright and early and we'll work it out. What did that mean? Work it out. The Savage Mill was shuttered and locked tight. What kind of dirty trick was this? Irritation had morphed into rage. Emmett was Johnny Meehan's best client, his wealthiest client, and he would not tolerate this kind of disrespect. Maybe he would put Johnny Meehan out of business. Ben Kelly was mad to buy the mill, turn it into a boxing school. If Johnny's customers lost trust in him, he'd be forced to sell. Maybe Emmett would buy Irish Revivals. At least he'd have a place to store his treasures. Could all this have something to do with the shady folks Johnny surrounded himself with? Snakes they were. Maybe it was time Emmett told Johnny everything he knew. Up until now, he had kept the secrets to himself. Leave well enough alone was his motto. He was just the messenger, and messengers never fared well. Neither did Sneaks. And truth be told, he had snooped around the mill a bit. Who could blame him? He had every intention of keeping his nose clean. But now Johnny's poor taste in people was affecting Emmett. Someone was messing with him. It would not stand. He was going to get to the bottom of this right here and now. If he had to point fingers, then so be it. He would start pointing. As Emmett rounded the bend, the tiny cottage came into view, stone by stone. He couldn't imagine living in such a confining space. Emmett's mansion, some might call it a castle, was over 3,000 square feet. Johnny's cottage was hardly bigger than one of Emmett's luxury bathrooms. He stopped to catch his breath and kick Claude off his shoe. The only good thing he had to say about nature was that mostly it stayed outside where it belonged. Emmett had paved every bit of grass around his castle. More room for precious sculptures and a lot less dirt on his shoes. He should have brought his walking stick. A twig cracked behind him, and then another. He whirled around to see Johnny's dog, an Irish wolfhound, lurking behind him. The hound's tall body was on high alert, creamy fur blowing every which way, eyes wide and tracking, tail up in the air. Big as a small horse, he was in need of a good brushing. Emmett turned away. He much preferred items to animals. His chest tightened, another reminder it was time to give up the smoking. Oh, it was hideous getting old. What did he have to show for his time on Earth? A wife and kids who wanted to be as far away from him as possible? Friends who took his money and left him empty-handed, ungrateful? Everyone was so ungrateful, except for his castle and his items. Rare architectural pieces that held real meaning, history, stories, a pig owned by a Japanese princess. The sun was fully up now, striking the surface of the Galway Bay and setting it on fire. From here it stretched out to eternity, God's country. He'd like to see any man deny it. He turned back to the stone cottage and sized it up as if it were the enemy. The stones were rough and uneven. The blue door sported cracked paint, and the windows were smudged with grime. The last time he'd been up here laughing with Johnny, having a whiskey to toast the regal iron gates Johnny had managed to source for his entry. The windows had been sparkling clean. His suspicions had just been confirmed. Something was seriously wrong with Johnny Meehan. Emma took the stone walkway at full speed, reached the house and pounded on the door. Paint chipped off and fluttered to the ground like blue snowflakes. He waited and received only silence for his effort.
Johnny?
Emmett turned the knob and pushed. The old door swung open with an elongated creak, and seconds later, a sour smell enveloped Emmett. What on earth was that odour? He stared into the dark. It smelled like mould and three-day bread, and something even worse, like raw meat sitting on a counter for days. Emmett threw his sleeve over his mouth before he gagged. He could make out the sink in the wee kitchen to the left, piled with dirty dishes. He thought he saw something scamper across the mound and shivered. Had the dirty dishes been there so long they were attracting vermin?
Hello?
Footsteps sounded on the path behind him, too human to be the hound. He turned. A figure lurked behind him, dressed in baggy dark clothing, face obscured by enormous dark sunglasses, and an oversized hood. Some kind of costume? It looked like the Grim Reaper. Fear rose in Emmett's throat.
Who are you?
The figure raised its right arm. Instead of a scythe, he or she was holding a cast-iron object. Was it the pig? Emmett threw his hand over his eyes. It was so hard to see with that blasted sun shining directly into his eyes, blinding him. He threw his hand up so he could see. Is that my pig? His gut screamed that it did not matter. Death had come for him. The Reaper was real. His heart thumped. His voice quivered. He could not take his eye off whatever this thing was. And then the object was in the air. A blur flying directly at his head at warp speed. Try and catch it, or duck. He tripped on the doorframe and hit the ground, falling on his back, half in and half out of the house. He struggled to lift his head, muster a scream, but just as the thought struck, so did the object. It collided with his temples, sending a thundering pain through his poor head. The back of his skull slammed into Johnny's floor. He stared at the tilted beams in the ceiling as footsteps drew closer, and everything started to spin. The hood hovered over him. He tried to speak, but his mouth wouldn't move. Why? The figure raised its arm and removed the hood. Emmett squinted. When his eyes adjusted, he could make out the eyes, nose, and mouth of his attacker, curled up in a cruel grin, eyes dancing with excitement. This was no Grim Reaper. This was all too human, and even more terrifying. For a second, he forgot about the gash in his head as he pointed. You? Was all he managed to say. He stilled as his body held his breath. He heard a whoosh of air and pounding feet as his attacker fled.
Coward!
If only he'd listened to his wife and carried his mobile phone on him. He'd never warmed to technology. Did Johnny Meehan have a phone in the cottage? He could either spend his energy looking for it, or he could help the guards catch a killer. His poor head. There wasn't much life left in him, and he knew it. He touched his fingertips to his wound, then used his dwindling energy to half crawl, half slide to the back wall. For once, he saw the benefit of having a tiny home. He pushed onto his knees and began to write on the wall. He managed four letters before he fell back for the last time and released his final breath with a moan. His last thought was of the princess and his pig. Tara Meehan stood in the middle of the pedestrianized shop street, cradling the delicate tin box that held her mother's ashes, as she took in the pulsing city her mother called home. Galway, Ireland. The city of tribes. Snippets of the song Galway Girl began to play in her head. And I ask you, friend, what's a fella to do? 'Cause her hair was black and her eyes were blue. Having black hair and blue eyes herself, Tara had always been partial to the song. You're a lucky lass, her mother would say on those mornings when Tara was just a girl. Her mother was always gentle and patient, while brushing Tara's thick black hair into something a little more manageable. Black hair and blue eyes is a knockout combination. Her mother always made her feel good. She was loved. And now, here she was. Not exactly a girl anymore, at 33, but that girl was still inside her. So excited to be here she was, bursting at the seams. Standing here, taking in the cobblestone streets and pubs and people and music. There was live music playing from nearly every corner. Her heart throbbed in her chest. It was love at first sight. Shops splashed in bright colours cozied up on both sides of the street, and passers-by crisscrossed from one side to the other as she stood still. Buskers staked out corners, filling the salty air with their songs. Guitar cases flung open, crumpled euros and coins scattered inside. An Asian man in an orange jumpsuit was on the sidewalk up ahead, bent over a large dog he was sculpting out of sand, his thin hands kneading as people gathered to watch him work. Next to him, a tall African man in traditional garb stood in front of a table filled with beaded jewellery. Young men lingered in front of pubs, cigarettes dangling from their fingers, smoke curling into the air as their bright eyes followed the pretty girls in short skirts laughing up the street. Galway was one of the youngest cities in Europe, and for a second, Tara felt ancient. This was a college town, an art town, a music haven. She could smell pints of ale, reminding her that Galway was sometimes called the graveyard of ambition. The numerous pubs and entertainment so tempting that one could find him or herself partying 7 nights a week, and no one would blink an eye. Right, he's drunk 7 nights a week. It's up to himself to mind his own liver. Up ahead, Tara saw a throng of people circled around a street performer. The crowd hid him from view, but whoever it was, he was generating excitement. Curiosity pulled her forward. It was a young man riding a unicycle while juggling 3 large knives. The wheel of his cycle jutted back and forth as he pedaled. The large knives glittered as he twirled them high in the air. Something made him turn his head toward her and stare. His eyes locked onto her tin box. He jerked his head upward. "Toss it up here," he said with a toothy grin. The crowd parted, practically panting in anticipation. "No." Before she could protest further, the box was snatched out of her hands by a man in front of her and tossed up to the performer, who caught it effortlessly and added it to his rotation with a wink and a grin. The crowd cheered and clapped. The latch on the tin box remained clasped, but Tara knew it was only a matter of time. Was this really happening? "No," Tara said. "Please, give it back."
"Don't worry, he's got it,"
a woman yelled out.
"It's going to come open,"
Tara yelled at the man. "Please." Panic eked out of her. The unicycling juggler ignored her as the box containing her mam's ashes tumbled helplessly in the air.
"Please,"
Tara begged.
"Give it back."
"You heard the lady."
A man appeared beside her, staring up at the juggler. He was tall and Irish and handsome, with tints of green in his hazel eyes and hair the colour of sand. But all Tara cared about was the box.
"Ronan,"
the handsome stranger said in a commanding voice.
"Toss it here."
The juggler, Ronan, nodded at the man, and with a flick of his wrist, the box was sailing back to her. Tara lunged to reach it, and although her hands caught it, her feet kept moving until she tripped, and the box flew out of her hands, morphing into a projectile. There was the stranger again, standing right in its path. The box hit him squarely on the chest. The lid flew open, and her mother's ashes exploded out, coating the stranger's face and chest in specks of grey. Tara could only stare.
"Oh no, sorry, ma'am."
He slowly gazed down at his body, then locked eyes with Tara. He blinked at the tin, which was lying at his feet, its tiny mouth open, contents expelled. His eyes met hers and locked on.
"Tell me that's just a wee sandbox," he said in a low and easy voice.
Tara took a deep breath, tried not to laugh, tried not to cry. She forced a smile.
"Is it too early to meet my mother?"
Chapter 2. The man picked up the tin and tried to shake the ashes on his shirt back into the box,
but the wind picked up and carried most of them away. Tara took a step forward.
I'm so sorry. You're joking me, right? This isn't your mother.
It's my fault. I'm clumsy. She wanted me to bring her back to Ireland. She wanted her ashes spread near the Galway Bay.
He glanced down the street in the direction of the wind.
I'd say she's on her way.
Nervous laughter bubbled out of Tara. She grasped her mother's rosary that she'd tucked into the pocket of her jeans and silently said the prayer she had prepared. She hadn't planned on spreading the ashes until she'd met her Uncle Johnny. But on a whim, she wanted her mother with her on her first exploration of the city. So she'd taken the tin out and carried it around for a bit of comfort. Foolish lass. She was sure they would have a different phrase for her. Egypt Yank. Maybe she had a hand in this, Tara said. Her mother had had a wicked sense of humour. Some people hated it. Tara always loved it. It was just like Margaret Meehan to insist on doing her own thing.
I'd best get this washed off me, I suppose,
the man said, moving away.
No offence.
Wait! Panic seized her, as if he were walking away with her mother. He stood still as she approached. She held her hands out, tears welling into her eyes. She did not want to cry. She held out her hands. May I? He gazed at her intently and nodded. She ran her hands over him lightly, his body strong and unflinching until her palms and fingertips were soft and grey. And then she stepped back, feeling doubly foolish but somehow relieved. Thank you. He stood still as she picked up the tin from the ground and moved on, heading for the bay. She did not turn around, but she could feel him watching her. That was intense. She'd felt a flicker of something, that thing she hadn't felt since Gabriel and Thomas. If held at gunpoint, she would be forced to admit what it was. A spark. Stop it. She was losing it. Jet lag and grief could do that to a girl. Tara took a deep breath and continued to the bay, where she prayed the waters would heal her heart. Just a little. Just for now. The Galway Bay was spread before her, expansive and full of promise. Parked a few feet from the bay was a white caravan with a painting of a gypsy. Long, rainbow-coloured hair blowing in the wind. Big, knowing eyes. Full red lips. Fortunes sprawled across the side of the caravan in red paint, and underneath it, readings here. Paint cans were lined up along the base of the caravan as if the job had just been completed. As Tara took it all in, the door to the caravan was flung open, revealing a tiny woman with wavy black and grey-streaked hair down to her hips. She wore a long, flowing yellow dress. Her face was heavily made up, and a bright red rose was tucked in her hair over her left ear. A prickly sensation tickled the back of Tara's neck as the woman gazed at her openly. It was as if she had been expecting her. Tara laughed off the thought and lifted her hand in a wave. The woman lifted a crooked finger and beckoned Tara closer.
Death is all around you, she said. Why is that?
Tara started. Was the woman so observant that she'd already guessed the tin held her mother's ashes? But no, the tin was open and empty.
Go home, the woman said, before it's too late.
Anger surged through Tara.
I am home.
In a way it was true. Her mother had always referred to Ireland as home, their home.
Danger follows you.
So she was one of those, a con artist who used fear to draw in customers. Tara squared her shoulders.
Danger follows everyone.
The woman shook her head. Tara had to hand it to her. She'd certainly perfected an expression of alarm.
This danger's coming straight for you.
Let it, Tara said. I'm a New Yorker. The woman cocked her head and narrowed her eyes.
You've been warned.
The door to the caravan slammed closed, swallowing the fortune teller with it. That was strange. What an eccentric city with a cast of characters to match. Rocks crunched beneath Tara's feet as she moved past the caravan to the water's edge. She gazed out at the bay and said the Irish blessing that was the closest thing to a prayer she had memorized. May the wind always be at your back. She wasn't going to cry, but when she reached the last verse, may God always hold you in the palm of his hand. Tears flowed down her cheeks as she held out her palms where the remains of her mother rested. You're here, ma'am, she said out loud. You're home. She stared out at the sailboats bobbing on the water until the breeze dried her tears. Her mother's last words echoed in her ear.
Tell Johnny I'm so sorry. So much time wasted. Take me home.
Sharp metal bit into Tara's fingers. She cried out, only to see she was squeezing the tin so hard it was cutting into the fleshy part of her hand between her thumb and index finger. She had forgotten she was even holding it. Toss me. Tara hurled the tin into the bay. It struck the water with a splash and began to playfully dance along the surface. The sound of a flute floated overhead, a soft, lilting tune. Tara blew a kiss and watched until it slowly took on water and submerged. Until we meet again. She wished her mother was at peace, in a joyful place, where she would receive Cade Mille Falsche, 100,000 welcomes. A place, well, a place, just like this. The Bay Inn was situated in the middle of a quiet street, just off the Quay Street. It looked more like a detached Victorian home, although it shared its right wall with a lively pub. Inside, it was like stepping back in time, with dark wood, muted flowered carpet, and a winding staircase up to the rooms. The floors creaked as Tara made her way to the check-in desk. Behind it stood an older woman with white hair pulled up in a neat bun. Beside her, a young blonde in her early 20s was polishing the counter with gusto, working the manufactured scent of lemon into the air. A light sheen of sweat had broken out on her forehead, and her tongue hung out over the corner of her mouth. The older woman hovered behind her like a ghost, refusing to leave its earthly home.
I won't tolerate your tardiness any more. I told you when you hired me that class comes first, the girl answered. You try making a souffle.
She continued to polish the counter as if it was of monumental importance.
If you're late again, I'm giving you the boot.
The older woman barked.
And what self-respecting Irish woman would make a souffle? Meat, potato and veg. Now that's the way to a man's heart. I agree, if by that you mean heart attack. I won't stand for any more of your sass.
The rag stopped moving. The girl's chin shot up.
Go ahead. Give me the boot. Nobody else will work with you, you old crow.
Hey, Tara said. Where she came from, you didn't speak to your elders like that. And she had half a mind to grab the girl by her pixie haircut and toss her out the front door. The two heads swiveled her way, conversation screeching to a halt as they stared at Tara.
Welcome to the Bay Inn,
the older woman said with a practiced smile.
Thank you,
Tara said, keeping her eyes pinned on the young girl, hoping that her stern look was getting through.
American?
The young girl said. She made a face.
Afraid so, Tara said.
Do you have a reservation?
So many reservations.
The older woman pulled a giant tome out from underneath the counter and began to leaf through it. Tara stared at it, expecting a cloud of dust to rise with the turn of each page.
I don't, actually. I was being spontaneous, Tara said.
Do you have a vacancy?
The young girl snorted.
We always have a vacancy, because somebody refuses to catch up to the times.
Why don't you catch up to the times by showing up when you're supposed to?
The older woman said. The young girl rolled her eyes. The old woman turned and removed a key from an actual cubbyhole behind her. Maybe it took age and experience to appreciate how quaint this throwback of an inn was. Tara wanted to tell her not to change a thing. Her excitement grew when soft papery hands slipped the key into hers. It was an old-fashioned iron key. It was exquisite and felt substantial in her hands.
I love it, Tara said.
You love what?
The young girl said.
This key. This inn. Tara beamed. It's perfect.
Just as she said it, she noted a splotch of red on the stem of the key. It looked like dried blood. She leaned in closer. It could have been paint. Or nail polish.
Either way, too many germs.
Still, it added a bit of character, if you liked your inns on the spooky side. The young girl tilted her head and frowned. She had an athletic body and carved cheekbones. Tomboy was the word that came to mind, although Tara knew that that was an outdated and misogynistic term.
Room 301,
the older woman said, nodding at the key.
€60 a night.
That's the room with the leak, remember?
The young girl said. She snatched the key out of Tara's hand and tossed it back in the cubby for room 301.
Here.
She handed Tara the key to 305.
I don't remember that.
The older woman laid her hand over her head, as if the answers were stuck inside.
The plumber didn't have the part he needed, remember? He's coming back next week.
Tara placed a credit card on the counter. The older woman wrung her hands as her eyes flicked away from the credit card.
We're euro only.
I told you, the girl said with a roll of her eyes. Dinosaur age.
I don't have euro yet, Tara said. I'll need to go to an ATM.
There's one next door in the pub, the girl said.
I don't know how many nights I'm staying, Tara said.
Can I pay as I go?
You can,
the older woman said.
We'll need at least one night up front, plus €100 security deposit.
The security deposit is more than the room.
Correct, the young girl said with a look that conveyed how utterly unreasonable the old woman was.
It's fine, Tara said.
Maybe they were playing her, the Irish version of good cop, bad cop. She wondered if she should find someplace else. But she liked this place, right down to the oddly matched women standing in front of her.
I'll be right back.
You can leave your luggage, the older woman said. We'll mind it.
It was an easy process slipping into the pub next door to use the cash machine. She hurried back to the inn and paid for two nights plus the deposit. The younger woman was no longer behind the desk. The older woman pointed to the staircase behind her.
There's no lift.
I'm sorry?
You'll have to take the stairs.
Oh,
lift, elevator. She loved the tiny differences in language.
Thank you.
Tara was grateful she had packed only one small suitcase, for by the time she reached the third floor, she was slightly out of breath. Room 305 was directly to the right. She turned the key in the lock, and the door creaked open. The room was tiny but neat. A four-poster bed was the dominating feature, flanked by mahogany side tables. A black rotary phone rested on one table, a Bible on the other. Nestled on the wall across from the bed was a small desk with a tea kettle and cups. A simple cross made of wood hung above the bed. The room had two windows overlooking the street.
Tara was thrilled. She could sit up here and people watch all day if she wanted to. She went to the window and parted the heavy curtain. Sunshine streamed in, lighting up layers of dust on the side tables. Tara sneezed. So much for quaint. The young girl was right. It seemed as if no one had stayed in this room for a long time. She threw open both curtains and tried to open the windows. They wouldn't budge. She longed for just a little fresh air. She collapsed on the bed, too tired to lift the old phone to complain. Later, she'd make sure they got the windows open, and maybe she'd ask for a vacuum and some of that lemon-scented polish. Nobody was at the desk when Tara emerged just over an hour later. A shower and a change into a simple sundress had helped to revive her, and now she was off on her real mission of the day, to find out if her uncle was still alive and living in Galway. Johnny Meehan was her mother's only living relative in Ireland. Tara had never met the man. There had been some kind of feud between brother and sister, but whatever it was, her mother took the details with her to the grave. Tara figured the best way to get information was to talk to some old-timey bartenders. Surely they would be more reliable than a phone book. It was nearing 4 in the afternoon, and the pubs were starting to swell with folks ready to take on the weekend. In the one next door to the inn, the bartenders were young, and so were the patrons. Tara slipped in and out unnoticed, and headed down the street. The next pub she entered had a middle-aged female bartender. Tara exited and kept walking, the energy of the city slipping into her, making her grin and pick up her pace. Finally, she saw it, a stone building with a sign that looked generations old, O'Doul's. She entered and immediately knew this was the place. It was like a cavern inside and smelled of beer and bleach. Fiddles and guitars squawked out from a jukebox. It was no frills except for the older men in denim and boots filling the stools. There didn't appear to be a single woman in the place. The bartender was a grandfatherly type with a head of thick grey hair and a protruding belly.
"How are you?"
he called brightly as she walked in. There were a half dozen old men seated in various states of repose, but all of them froze upon seeing Tara.
"Hello,"
she called. She knew she was a beautiful woman, but she could hardly take credit for her good looks. She smiled and pulled up a stool. "Guinness, please." Instantly, her mind flashed to being in a New York City pub with her mother. "The Guinness here is okay. Wait until you try it at home. It's heavenly." She imagined her mother perched on the stool next to her. The bartender took his time pouring her Guinness, waiting for it to settle, before adding the head. All the while, he watched her out of one eye. If she hadn't been tuned into it, she would have given him credit for being subtle. The rest of the men were watching her openly, some with mouths hanging open.
"I've never seen you in here before,"
one of the old men crowed.
"Just visiting,"
the bartender said as he slid the pint of Guinness toward her.
"Yes," Tara said.
"Where would you be from?"
"America."
"Where in America?"
"New York City."
"New York City,"
an old man at the end of the counter exclaimed.
"How many windows does the Empire State Building have?"
He stared at her expectantly.
"I have no idea."
He continued to stare.
"A lot,"
Tara added, feeling like a fool. She had never even wondered how many. The man lifted his pint.
"It has 6,514 windows, double paned, which makes it 13,028 panels.
He took a sip, then set his glass down with a satisfied smack of his lips.
"Wow," Tara said.
Sounds like a lot, all right. The men laughed as the older man returned to staring into his pint.
Demind him,
the bartender said with a wink.
He's old stock.
Then what am I? Young stock?
You're a mongrel.
Tara smiled. I'm hoping to find another old stock.
All right. Who would that be now?
Johnny Meehan. He's probably in his late 60s.
Doing a bit of shopping?
The bartender asked. She frowned. Had he not heard her? No, she said. Not yet.
He hasn't been open the past week,
the bartender said. Pardon?
Johnny, there's been a closed sign in the shop for the past week. Danny quit, that's why,
a beefy man rolling a cigarette on the bar said. The bartender threw a look to the man and the inference was clear. No gossip in front of the American. Shop? Danny? Tara felt as if she was losing control of the conversation. Tara leaned forward. Johnny has a shop? The bartender raised an eyebrow.
Irish revivals, he said. Isn't that why you're here?
Irish revivals? Tara repeated.
They sell architectural wares. Is that not what you're looking for?
Excitement trilled through her. She and her mother loved antiques. Was he talking about antiques? Where is the shop? Tara asked. Two could play the mystery game. She didn't have to reveal more information than necessary either. Besides, her head was spinning with the revelation. A huge bulk of her childhood had been spent digging through antique stores and flea markets with her mother. She blamed it for her career as an interior designer. Although all her rich clients in New York wanted everything new and modern, Tara much preferred the history of a lovingly used item. It had been so long since a client allowed her to decorate exactly how she wanted, with a mix of new and old. How long had he owned this shop? She couldn't wait to see it.
As I said, it's been shuttered lately,
the bartender said, carefully. Do you know where he lives? Do you have his number? Do you know where he hangs out? It was a mistake, she realized, too late, to sound too eager and fire too many questions without waiting for a response. The bartender was on high alert now.
If I see him, who should I say is Colin?
Tara Meehan, she said. I'm his niece, and it's urgent I find him. It's a family matter.
Niece,
said the old man from a few stools down.
Well, I'll be. I didn't know the old wanker had any family left.
The bartender hushed him with a look. He edged closer to Tara as if trying to find the family resemblance in her face.
Are you sure you have the right Johnny Meehan, like?
My mother was Margaret Meehan, Tara said. An immediate change came over the bartender's face. Delight, and then just as quickly, he shut down, returning to a stern gaze.
My, 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 he said. How is Maggie?
Maggie? So he'd known her mother when she was young. The bartender leaned in.
My hearing isn't so good anymore. Did you say was?
Yes. My mother passed away last week. Fresh grief stung her. Just last week. Still didn't feel real. She still expected to see her mam's smiling face before her. Empathy filled the bartender's face.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I knew your mother when she was just a Colleen.
Tara nodded, recognizing the Irish term for girl, and gave a soft smile.
I've come to find my uncle and let him know. She ended up in New York City?
The bartender asked.
Yes.
The bartender whistled.
Was she happy?
Tara tilted her head.
We had our moments.
The bartender took out a napkin and began to draw.
Here's the mill, the shop.
He was a good map maker. It's in the Cladda.
Cladda, like the ring?
The very same, where it all started.
But if it's thatched hut you're after, there aren't many left.
The bartender winked.
Once you see the Spanish Arch, the village is just across the way.
Johnny lives in a cottage up a wee hill, a short walk from the salvage mill.
Irish revivals, the trivia man said. That's the one.
She smiled, hoping he wasn't going to ask her how many windows it had.
Thank you.
A middle-aged man burst into the bar dressed in a red and white striped tracksuit, his muscles bulging. He bounced rather than walked.
Ben Kelly,
the old man down the bar slurred.
Guess who this lass is?
He pointed at Tara.
That's Johnny Meehan's niece. Margaret Meehan's daughter. Can you believe that?
Ben Kelly turned to her, his brown eyes pinning her down. He reminded her of a dog tied in a yard, straining at the end of his leash.
Niece?
She stared at the vein bulging in his neck and nodded.
He never mentioned you, like.
Tara met his intense gaze. He's never met me. Ben Kelly squinted, then edged forward.
Now, let me give you the best advice you're ever going to get in your life.
She waited. He moved even closer until she could smell his whiskey breath. This wasn't his first pub stop.
Don't.
Tara stared.
Don't what?
Don't meet him.
Go home. You'll be sorry if you invite that kind of trouble into your life.
He turned and headed away from her before Tara could formulate a response.
But if you're too stubborn or too stupid to heed my advice, then you tell that bollocks he should sell the mill to me before I dig up too much dirt. Tick, tock, tick, tock. Dig up too much dirt?
He winked, but it did little to take the venom out of his words.
Do mind him,
the bartender said.
Let me guess, he's old stock too?
The men in the pub laughed. Ben Kelly, face buried in the jukebox, didn't even turn around.
He is indeed,
the bartender said. Tara nodded and let it drop. She had no desire to get dragged into the local drama. She'd meet Johnny first and maybe he'd eventually tell her what this was all about. And maybe Johnny Meehan wasn't a nice man. There had to be a reason her mother left. Never saw him again.
Tell Johnny, I'm sorry. So much time wasted.
Tara would not let the locals colour her opinion of her mother's brother. Her mother still had love for him, or she wouldn't have asked Tara to apologise for her. Tara had the feeling the estrangement had been born out of pain, not anger. She digested Ben Kelly's anger with more curiosity than alarm. It dawned on her that in a country that claimed to have hospitality down to an irresistible charm, this was at least the second time in the few hours she'd been here that she had been advised to go home. So much for 100,000 welcomes. She had yet to receive even one. Chapter 3. Tara was given her first Cladda ring for her 10th birthday. She loved the clasped hands for friendship, the crown for loyalty, and the heart for love. Now here she was, standing on the threshold of the community of Cladda, the oldest part of Galway, whose history she knew well from her studies. Cladda, translated, meant stony shore, and it was no surprise the community of Cladda resided where the River Corrib met the Galway Bay. It was easy to find the community by first locating the Spanish Arch. Despite the name, the 600-year-old stone arch, part of the old city walls, wasn't built by Spaniards. It was built by the Eyre family, but nicknamed for the Spanish sailors who used to dock at the edge of the city and trade at the arch. Tara was thrilled to see the sights that previously she'd only known about from poring over guidebooks and videos on YouTube. Cladda didn't disappoint. The little fishing village dated back to the 5th century. Until the 1930s, it was also dotted with thatched huts. Unfortunately, they were taken down as the community evolved. There was even a king of Cladda, although it was in name only. And Tara couldn't for the life of her remember who it was or what exactly the king did. Semi-detached houses awash in pastel colours dotted the landscape like a string of lights. And across the way, sailboats and swans bobbed on the water. Here you could take the path, technically the Salt Hill Promenade, or the Prom, from Cladda to the community of Salt Hill. Its Irish name was Bohun na Thra, which means sea road. It was a 2-mile walk that Tara had every intention of taking when she got the chance. Across the bay, mountains completed the postcard-perfect view. Tara knew them to be the Burren, technically in County Clare, a gorgeous national park with a rocky landscape. Tara stood on the prom and followed the directions on the napkin until she spotted the old stone mill the bartender had marked with an X. From the front it looked like a normal stone building, but as she drew closer she could see that it extended for a long way behind it. A red sign above the massive doors read, Irish Revivals. Next to the mill was a small creek, and in the middle of the creek was a large wheel turning slowly. Did it pump the water? As the bartender warned, there was indeed a closed sign on the door. Tara crept closer. Underneath the closed sign, someone had pinned a note. You bollocks, thief, I'm reporting you to the guards. Someone wasn't happy. Was it Ben Kelly who left this note? He had used the term bollocks to refer to Johnny just minutes ago. Her uncle was certainly in a bit of conflict. She wondered why the shop was closed. Was he sick? Why was someone calling him a thief? The mill was large, but the windows were situated too high to peer in, so she was left to wonder what was inside. She glanced at the map again to see the location of Johnny's cottage. She followed the map along the river until she reached the hill leading up to her uncle's stone cottage. The air was fresh and smelled of limestone and the sea. The grass beneath her feet was soft and shining, and at the top of the hill, the Irish blue skies domed what should have been a cheerful stone cottage. The sight before her was anything but. The cottage door yawned open, and an old man lay half in and half out of the doorway, the muddy bottoms of his shoes facing her. Was he hurt? Passed out from drink? Hello? She ran up to him, already reaching for her cell phone. What was the equivalent of 911 in Ireland? As she drew closer, she saw glassy brown eyes open and staring straight up, covered by a milky white film. His mouth was open too, as if frozen in horror. Only his beard moved, the wind whipping it against a face drained of all colour. There was a nasty gash at his temple, and blood pooled down and around him and behind him like a macabre red carpet. There was no mistaking it. He was dead, viciously attacked. She cried out and slapped her hand over her mouth. She whirled around and ran until she was a safe distance from the cottage, leaned over, and forced herself to breathe. When it came to meeting her uncle, she had imagined all possibilities, including that he might be dead. But she never once imagined this horrific scenario. She turned and ran, fear and adrenaline propelling her forward. She ran down the hill to the first old man she saw, a skinny soul who was pushing a cart filled with fishing nets and gear down the cobblestone path with great concentration. Help, she said. She had to say it again before he lifted his head and looked at her. She took out her phone and waved it. I need to call the police. How do I call the police? She waited at the base of the hill for the guards. An ambulance arrived first, followed by 2 guard cars. They spilled out of their vehicles and huddled around her. She pointed to the top of the hill.
"He's dead," she said. "Johnny Meehan."
A tall guard watched her carefully from his patrol car, cigarette smoke curling out the window. He stepped out, flicked his smoke to the ground, and motioned up the hill as he ground it out with his boot. The paramedics started to climb, the empty stretcher looming between them like a harbinger of doom. The officer approached Tara with weary eyes.
"How are you?" he said with a nod. "I'm Detective Sergeant Gable."
"Tara Meehan."
His eyebrows raised as he tucked his thumbs into the waist of his trousers.
"You're related to Johnny?"
"He was my uncle."
"Are you sure he's passed?"
Tara swallowed as a shudder ran through her.
"I'm sure."
"I've never seen you here before."
"It's my first time."
He shifted, glanced at her, then dug a notebook from his pocket. The breeze off the bay blew his salt and pepper hair from underneath his cap.
"Your first time?"
"Yes."
"In Ireland?"
"Yes, and..."
She glanced up the hill.
"It would have been my first time meeting my uncle."
He let out a low whistle. "I'm sorry."
"Me too."
Tara glanced at the hill. The group was only halfway up. There was no reason to hurry, but Tara found herself wishing they would.
"I think he was murdered,"
she blurted out.
"He has a gash on his head and there's a lot of blood."
"Murdered?" His face remained still, but she heard the incredulity in his voice.
"We wouldn't be dealing with many murders out here now."
"There's a terrible gash on his head and..."
"And?" He took a step forward.
"I think his body was dragged to the doorway."
She swallowed, remembering the carpet of blood behind him.
"Or maybe he crawled to the door trying to get out and get help, but he didn't make it."
A shudder ran through her. He frowned.
"Fancy yourself a detective, do you?"
"No, you asked. I'm answering."
"Let us do our job."
"I would expect nothing less. I can't believe this is happening."
"I'm sorry." He was still writing in a notebook. "Where are you staying?"
"The Bay Inn."
"Go there now. I'll call for you when we're done here."
"I'd like to stay."
"I can't stop you. But you're not to take a single step up that hill. If you're correct about the situation, this entire area may be a crime scene."
"I won't interfere. I just want to stay here."
The detective sergeant tipped his cap to her, then turned his back and proceeded with the rest of the guards up the hill.
"Don't leave town,"
he called out, just before he disappeared over the crest. It was ridiculous standing here at the base of a hill, where she could see nothing, do nothing. The police and ambulance were drawing spectators. Men, women, and children dotted the path, assembled as if they had just been summoned to an emergency meeting. Gawpers, her mam would have called them. She missed her mother's colourful sayings more than she could have ever imagined. Everyone kept their distance from her, but she could hear their voices gather speed as they threw furtive glances her way, then up the hill. At least from down here you couldn't see the horrific sight in the cabin. She needed some comfort. A cup of coffee would have to do. She walked down the cobblestone path until she could cross the street. She entered the first cafe she saw, with a sign boasting, "The the second best Irish breakfast in Galway.
I don't know, a female voice said as a tiny bell announced her entry. But there's two guard cars and an ambulance.
I saw them going up the hill.
Johnny Meehan's place, a male voice said.
Maybe that's why the shop's been closed. Johnny could be sick. Has anyone checked on him lately?
He keeps his own company, you know yourself.
Tara pretended not to be listening, for she wanted to glom onto every word. Tears stung her eyes, and she was surprised to know she felt grief for a man she'd never met, bar a few photographs in a dusty album. My mother's brother. She couldn't help but see the gash, the blood, his staring eyes.
He's not sick, Tara heard herself say. He's gone.
Hit over the head, attacked. She shouldn't have blurted out that he was dead. But there was no taking it back now. Head snapped her way, jaws dropped. People edged closer. The woman took out a rosary and started to pray.
Gone,
a man said, rising.
Johnny Meehan has passed.
Yes, he's passed. The female crossed herself.
How is it you know?
A man asked, leaning so far forward she was afraid he'd keel over.
I found him.
Tara's voice was barely a whisper.
Sit down, loving,
the man said, pulling out a seat. She was thankful and sunk into it.
He's my uncle,
Tara said, as tears rolled down her cheek.
I went up there to meet him for the very first time. Ah, you poor pet,
the woman behind the counter said. She was large and bosomy.
Now,
she shoved something at the old man, who then placed it in front of Tara. It was a giant slice of lemon meringue pie. The kindness overwhelmed Tara. Her pent-up grief came pouring out.
Ah, Petal,
the woman said, her hand fixed to her heart.
I didn't know he had any family.
A lump rose in Tara's throat.
May I have a cup of coffee to go?
Of course,
the woman said.
Coffee for takeaway coming right up.
She set about pouring it.
There, there.
The old man patted her hand. These two were like the Irish grandparents she never knew. Other people were starting to shift to the windows, and she heard the word dead repeated several times. What do you think? The man said.
Would it be his heart? All right. Ben Kelly will finally get it.